now?
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. All right, 303. Mick Monaghan with you. Time is fine. It's already 3 hours into our five-hour midnight ride. Got you for another two till the warm-up show at 5 a.m. Fliegelman on the other side. Phone number to call, 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We'll try that, see how that works. See if you remember it that way. So obviously the big story of the night, both from the baseball teams, obviously, the Mets pound the Texas Rangers, the defending World Series champs, 14-2, get 22 hits. This offense has awoken. They've won 6 in a row, 10 of 12. And it all started with Grimace, you bunch of weirdos. You love this Grimace story. Well, God bless you. I'm still not sure if I'm willing to call them back. I don't know if I'm ready to tell you this Met team is going to explode. They're playing very well. They're the hottest team in baseball. The offense has woken up, which is a good sign because I do believe the offense is far better than what it's been. It's not what it was last night, but it's far better than what it's been over the course of the year and what was supposed to be their strength. And if it can get back to being even a facsimile of what we saw last night and what it should be, this team has a chance considering how well this rotation is done. And hopefully Diaz now back. But, you know, as they head to Texas, and obviously these two teams are connected in two main ways, DeGrom and Scherzer. So as you head to Texas, and I still laugh. I hate to invoke Sal because I love him. But I do. The one thing I think I got on him once too about it was I remember being mad because, believe it or not, I like the Mets. Nobody seems to agree with that. I do. Sometimes I don't like Met fans, but hey, I like Yankee fans even less most of the time. But the night he signed with Texas, I thought SMY was a little bit ridiculous, to be honest with you. And I thought they were, you know, completely bad-mouthing DeGrom. He didn't want to be here. Good riddance. You know, that was the take. It was like Met pop propaganda a little bit. But I shouldn't say that because I know, you know, SNY does a great job. They do. But that night, it just felt like, I'm not sure why we're crapping on DeGrom. And it was like, oh, yeah, go to Texas. Good luck winning. You turn down playing for a 100-win team to go play for a 100-loss team. Go, and then you see what happens. Without him, they win the championship. That's why I tell you it's a crapshoot. But as they head to Texas, and of course Scherzer is still there from the trade, and he was, you know, celebrating like he was a main cog of the World Series last year when he had nothing to do with it. But I saw SMY again trying to, you know, figure out how to put into context these two starting pitchers who have a history with the New York Mets, certainly DeGrom, who is arguably right there with Tom Seaver as the greatest pitchers to pitch for the franchise. And so they asked a couple questions that I kind of found interesting. So I'll admit I saw it on SNY, not a McMonagall creation. But the two questions around the pitchers as we try to, you know, figure out how to justify or put into context their Met careers. The question for Jacob DeGrom was, do you retire Jacob DeGrom's number? And I love Jacob DeGrom. In my mind, I've never seen a pitcher better than Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher I've ever seen. Now, I know Mariano Rivera. I'm not trying to argue with you. Just as far as starting pitchers, his stuff, his dominance. When he was at his peak and pitching, I don't know if I've seen his equal. That's how good Jacob DeGrom was. That's how good he was. And I'm hoping for his sake, although I don't really need to see it in Texas, to be honest with you, I hope he can get back there. I guess he threw off a mound for the first time, threw for 15 minutes, and he says he's feeling all right. Hopefully he's working his way back to be with the team sometime shortly after the All-Star break. God bless him. But as much as I like him, and as much as I feel the fans were ridiculous when he left, and I argued with Met fans forever about good riddance, he didn't want to be here, all the nonsense that I think is a false narrative, and I don't want to get back into that, but they didn't pay him. They didn't offer him a legitimate contract. Look what he got from Texas. If he would have turned down money to go play somewhere else, then you could say he didn't want to be here. Were there signs? Is there a possibility he would have rather have not been here? Sure, but we don't know because he didn't turn down the money. We're more confident, at least I am, that the Mets didn't want to re-sign him than I am he didn't want to re-sign with the Mets. And hey, look at them. They're right. He got Tommy John. It's been a disaster for Texas, the amount of money they're paying him. And so ultimately they were right, but I still feel like, and hopefully now that they've gotten away a year from it, he still hasn't really pitched for Texas. What did he throw? 6-7 starts last year? I believe his last one was against the New York Yankees. Where do you put him in the context of great players in Met history? And now that it seems like this ownership group is much more willing to retire numbers, certainly they are, and maybe they're tired of retiring old numbers where no one seems to really care or go to the ballpark other than Keith, who obviously is still a part of this team in many ways as the broadcaster. But, you know, not to knock him again, but we know what the attendance was for Daryl and Doc, and there was a miserable day for Doc. But to actually retire players who are somewhat still on the forefront of Met fans, you know, recent memories, pitched in World Series, won playoff games against the Dodgers, you know, has, and then was a 2-time Cy Young Award winner, pitching like we have hardly seen anyone pitch with the amount of velocity consistently, the filthy sliders, the great stuff. So would you retire as a Met fan? Would you want Jacob DeGrom's number retired? And for me, this is a close one because it's not a lot of years. But I would lean towards yes if they're going to open it up to more players and open it up to more celebrations and loosen their reins on what has been a very stingy, certainly compared to the Yankees who retire way too many numbers, a very stingy Met organization and who they retire. If you came up through the organization, you went to a World Series with them, and while you were there, you were bar none, not only the best pitcher in Major League Baseball at that time, but arguably the peak that the position has ever seen. And I know I say that, and it sounds ridiculous, and it sounds like hyperbole. I don't know if it is. You couldn't hit DeGrom. I remember when he was struggling for that brief time at the end of when he came back from the injury at the end of 22 or whatever it was. Yeah, 22. And he got beat up by Oakland. It was shocking. Like, do you remember when he gave up like 4 or 5 runs to the Oakland A's? It was shocking. For 2 years, he didn't give up runs. It was on another level. So for me, whenever a great player like that comes through my ranks, has success somewhat winning on the field, not as much as I would like, but has some success winning, does sign an extension or another contract beyond his rookie contract with the team, and what in his time there is the best pitcher in the league for multiple years and arguably one of the great pitchers of all time, I think that's enough to warrant retiring his number. And I'd be surprised if the Mets give out the number at any point over the next couple of years just to give that a good opportunity. And I think he should have his number retired, and I think there should be a Jacob DeGrom Day, and it helps that he's pitching in Texas. And I would imagine that I don't think he's going to win another World Series. I don't think you're going to see him on the mound in the World Series for the Texas Rangers. It's just unlikely. It's hard to do, and they've won their championship. But, hey, you never know. But right now it feels like he doesn't have any signature moments with them. He hardly has pitched for them. That'll change, hopefully, for him. But ultimately, it's not like he's pitching for a team that gives you the bad vibes. He's not pitching for a team in the National League East. He's not a Marlin today. He's not a Brave, which everyone feared at the end of the year last year or 2 years ago. So I'm open to DeGrom's number being retired. I am. I wouldn't be upset by it. I don't think, you know, if you want to keep it sturdy, if you want to keep it stingy, he's right on the borderline. But, I mean, I know they won a World Series, Doc and Darryl, but, I mean, he's right there as one of the greatest players of the generation. Piazza didn't win a World Series with the Mets. So I'm right there with it. Now, the other question about Scherzer, because that's the real, you know, puzzling one on how you view, I don't know how puzzling it is, but how do you view Max Scherzer's 10 years in New York Met? And I got to tell you, I like Andy Martino, and I'm in the process of listening to his book, which leads into a side story or a side question. If you are listening to a book on tape, I've had this discussion with a bunch of people. If you are listening to a book on tape, can you say you've read the book? Like, if you've listened to it, not read it, because you don't have time. Like, in my travels, in my commuting, I listen to books on tape. Can I say I've read a book if I've listened to it? I know the story. I get the unabridged version. I listen to every word that would be written down on a page. I just don't have the time to sit and read it. I do it while I'm driving. Can I tell people I've read the book? Because there are a couple people who say, no, you can't. You got to specify that you've listened to it, which I think is ridiculous. I've read the book. So I'm currently reading Andy Martino's book, The Cashman Years, or The Yankee Way. I know, it's amazing it took so long for me to come to that book. But I like Andy Martino, but I disagree with his take on this topic because he believes that Max Scherzer had an excellent Met career because of the elements he brought inside the team. A veteran Hall of Fame caliber player, the impact he had on that 101-win team, the impact he had on the clubhouse and the accountability he brought to the Mets. And while I respect all of that, the only positive I take out of Max Scherzer, for me, is that in my mind, the new owner, Steve Cohen's tenure, began with that signing. The moment you realized this is different. Now, look, would have the Wilpons traded for Lindor and gave him a contract? No. But he was so rich. Coming in, you felt like he had to make a splash. He had to do something. He makes the trade. He gives him the contract. Okay, it's the first big move. It's a bigger move than the Wilpons would have ever done. It did signalize a change in a way. But for me, that was like, okay, I got to come in here and do something. I've brought in Sandy Alderson holding my hand to appease the rest of Major League owners. It's the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down. I'm going to take my time with it a little bit. You know, I'm not going to come in and right away spend all this money, but I got to do something, so it's Lindor. Giving Scherzer that contract, giving Max Scherzer, an aging veteran, still at the top of his game, and he came in and had a great year, to give him that contract, for me, was the signaling of this is brand new. This is something Met fans aren't used to, being in the mix for a short-term, high-money contract to a Hall of Fame veteran pitcher. This is out of the norm. And so I look at that as kind of the beginning of Steve Cohen owning the Mets, the beginning of Steve Cohen saying, I'll spend money, the beginning of, hey, Met fans, you can expect life to be a lot different. And that is a significant moment for a Met fan and a Met fan base that despises the previous owner for things just like that. Never being in the mix with money, not recognizing retired numbers. Like, this all goes back to the difference between Cohen and the Wilpons. The embracing of Met history. The statue of Tom Seaver. The willingness to go out and spend big money in free agency and chase championships in the short term instead of, you know, only making moves for the long term or running out to sign the cheaper option of the Max Scherzer. Like, that was the move that put Steve Cohen on the map for me and said, whoa, all right, this is a Met team we haven't seen since, you know, Santana and Beltran. Going back to the early 2000s, mid-2000s. That's how long ago it felt since a move like, you know, Pedro Martinez. And this was obviously still more at the top of his game than Pedro was even. And Pedro came in and pitched great for the Mets that first year. But, like, this really signified it. But then once you get into what he did, yes, he was great that first year, was a major contributor into a 101-win season. dealt with DeGrom being injured for a lot of the year, and they leaned on him, no doubt. But then you can't shake what happened at the end of the year. You can't shake the bad start against Atlanta, and then you can't shake the horrendous start against San Diego, which, let's be honest, when you are a veteran Hall of Fame pitcher making that kind of money, you are brought there to make those two starts. You would have almost rather of him had a 4.5 ERA all year long and then been brilliant in those two starts. That's what he's there for. That's why the Dodgers traded for him when they traded for him and got a pitcher who couldn't get on the mound at the end of the year in the NLCS. And that's why the Mets signed him. And what they got was a failure in those two starts and then an absolute disaster at the start of the next year. And ultimately moved on from. So it's hard for me to call it anything other than a failure as a tenure. And I'm surprised it still gets so much talking about. I'm surprised Scherzer is still discussed as much. It was a year and a half. He was awful in the one playoff game he pitched. And I'm surprised when you go to Texas that it's that big a story when they also have DeGrom there. DeGrom is enough. DeGrom's history with the Mets, his signing with Texas, his inability to even be on the mound and them still win a championship, him coming back, should they retire his number off of all the retired numbers over the last 2 years? Like, that's enough of a talking point where I would think we could just forget Scherzer was ever a Met. Like, I don't know. Is it that? It's not even so much of a history that it needs to be discussed when you go face him. And they're not even facing him. But yet he becomes a story. And both of them, and they're answering questions. And I know he was, ribbing Alonso for not taking a hack against the position player when the position player made them. So I'm like, I know he's got friends in that clubhouse. I know he's it's only a year removed from when he was still pitching for the Mets. But ultimately, he's a nothing for me in Mets history. DeGrom is arguably, or almost inarguably, in my mind, the second best pitcher to ever pitch for the franchise. So I would think that's enough of a conversation that we could leave Max Scherzer out of it, because in my mind, his tenure here was a failure. And it's hard to say anything other than that. He was brought here for one thing, and he sucked at it. He was brought here to win those games, and he was terrible. But Jacob DeGrom is something else. And Jacob DeGrom, who's going to pitch in another uniform, or already has, might even pitch in some playoff games when you look at the crappy American League and if they could ever figure it out in Texas. But ultimately, sent to the American League West, couldn't be further away from the Mets. And the Mets didn't want him. And I think that should play the big role, because if you sell yourself on this idea that DeGrom left because he didn't want to be here, it's not true. You can believe certain narratives people tell you. And I'm not even saying that the information about his wife unhappy here, these are the rumors, right? His wife's unhappy here. He didn't like New York's handling of the COVID and whatever else, wearing a mask or whatever else the rumors are, that I have no idea if that's accurate or not. But those are the rumors on why he didn't want to be here anymore. Ultimately, he didn't get even close to the contract Texas offered him. Not even close. And they still wouldn't give him Scherzer money when he was had the ability to be a free agent or get a contract, and he had done what he'd already done for the Mets, and they still wouldn't offer him the same money that they ended up giving Verlander. They wanted no part of him. And ultimately, it looks like they were right. But for a player who the team themselves didn't want him to be here, he's arguably the greatest pitcher to ever pitch. Now, he didn't have the greatest career, but in the moment, I can't remember a pitcher I've seen that's been more dominant. He won 2 Cy Youngs and pitched into the World Series for your team. I would say that's pretty close to being enough to have your number retired. Let's get back to the calls. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. Yeah, just real quick about Scherzer. Yeah, I look at his tenure as a failure. Let's not forget the whole sticky stuff situation last year in LA. Where Buck came out, I don't know if he had Buck came out and just stood there with his hands in his pocket.
No, I know, and that was really the beginning I don't remember, maybe not the beginning, but that was really the beginning where it felt like, geez, Buck has. I know the year before, the Mets had the record breaking hit batters, and they would even joke about, you know, they would flash on the screen the red and show like Buck's evil eyes or whatever, but he never did anything. But they were winning, nobody cared. They were winning 101 games. The next year, he doesn't stick up for Verlander and the sticky stuff. You know, batters are still getting hurt. Like, that was kind of the beginning of the end of Buck Showalter.
Yeah. Real quick, listen, I'm a diehard Mets fan, and I know you don't need it, but just back you up. You're very fair about the Mets. You don't.
Thank you.
I know you have a little fun now and then.
Yeah.
But you know, you don't troll like some of the other. I don't want to mention some other guys on the station.
Just speak about me. I think I'm completely fair with the Mets.
No, you are, and you're right. Let me tell you something. I'm a diehard Mets fan. I wrote them off. I said they were dead in the water. I even talked to Al St. John last week, and I said we were looking at a 2-4 homestand.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with this. I'm over the moon that we're back in this. Let's enjoy it. I don't know what Stearns is going to do. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. One good thing, the Alvarez thing is kind of, listen, he's not Johnny Bench. This kid calls a good game. He makes a difference. Let's not overstate it. And the other thing you got to be look forward to is we're a different team on the road. We hit 60 points higher on the road.
No, been much better.
And the next 20 games are on the road.
Yeah.
So listen, I'm excited. And one last thing, Grimace is totally overrated. I think Nemec Cheese has it all over Grimace. You know, Nemec Cheese with the cheeseburger head. I mean, come on.
Who had the cheeseburger head?
Nemec Cheese.
Who's that?
Come on, Chris. Maybe it's before your time. Man McCheese, man. Look it up. There's Man McCheese, the Hamburglar.
That I know. I have no idea who Man McCheese is.
Oh, Man McCheese. He was the mayor of McDonaldland, and he had a big cheeseburger head. He was the man. Yeah. I mean, Mutch has it all over. Grimace. Grimace is a compiler. I mean, you know.
I vaguely remember the now I'm looking at the picture. I've never heard that before. I've never heard the name, Mayor McCheese.
That was a big thing back in the 70s. You used to get their glasses. They had a series of glasses. Every house in New York City, every guy in Queens.
I remember the Hamburglar. I remember, obviously, Grimace.
Captain Crook.
Captain Crook?
Yeah,
Captain I don't know
Crook.
Who Captain Crook is either.
He's
McDonald's?
Yeah, he used to steal the hamburgers. Yeah. So
Captain
I don't know how we
Crook.
Get into this. It's
3 o'clock in the morning. We can get into it. Captain Crook, I have no memory of him.
And one other thing, if you want to, you know, we obviously were talking to the Mets.
I remember Mac the Knight was the half moon, and he would sing, Mac Tonight, yeah. He was like the half moon that would play the piano and everything.
And one quick thing is for all the Mets Yankee fans, when you hit a little rough patch, you want to pick up your spirits, listen to the podcast. So you got to listen to the Cubs podcast tonight. Oh, my God. Hector Neris blew a 3-1 lead tonight. They've lost like 6 in a row. They want to clean house. They're down on council. They're down on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, man.
San Diego wants to run Manny Machado out on a rail. They've had it with everybody. They don't like Schilt. It's funny. We're not, you know, we think like we're the only guys who go through this. And the other cities, they go through the same thing. It's the same thing. It's funny. They're all the same. They want a clean house. They've had it. It's rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'm just here with 3 under or a game out. I'm on top of the world. I was wrong. I admit, I had this team dead in the water.
Yeah, so did
but
I.
That J.D. Martinez hit could have saved our season.
No, I don't think that's hyperbole, bud. I honestly don't, man.
Can I just say one quick thing? Yeah. That was Thursday night. I'm out to dinner. It's my daughter's 15th birthday. We're sitting in a beautiful restaurant, and like the lunatic I am, I keep checking my phone, and we're getting no hit. And I'm sitting there, and my wife's looking at me, my older daughter's looking at me, say, Dad, why do you have to keep it? And I'm like, this team stinks. They've got no heart. They're not clutch. I'm railing out all night about how. As the margaritas are going down, I'm railing on about how much the season's over. I come home, he hits the game-winning homer, and now look, in a matter of 5 days,
quick.
Back in it. Let's just enjoy it.
Just
enjoy it. I have faith in Stearns. He's going to do the right thing. You know, I like Mendoza. I think he did the right thing by putting Lindor lead off and batting Martinez third. And I think he really does handle like we said before, I've talked to you, it drives me nuts. Every time, I mean, how they question every bullpen move. But when a guy makes the moves and they get guys out, they never get any credit. It's like the Yankee fans in Boone. I mean, it's like one of the crazy things in baseball. It just drives me nuts.
No, I'm with you. It drives me nuts too, man. And thank you for the call. Good call. Yeah, I mean, the reliever, you're 100% right. If a reliever comes in and gives up runs, it's a terrible move. The manager's an idiot. If the bullpen has a clean game and wins you the game, no one says, you know, that was a good move to bring him in. Never, ever, ever. Players win, managers lose. Plain and simple. And especially that's the case with the New York Yankees. Especially with the New York Yankees. But yeah, you're right. Look around the rest of the Major League Baseball. The Padres have been one of the more underachieving teams. I mean, they had Juan Soto. They had Manny Machado. They had Xander Bogaerts. They had a damn good team last year. But he played every single game. How come they aren't winning like the New York Yankees? If it's just Juan Soto, how come Juan Soto didn't win with them? How come Juan Soto still had losing seasons with the Nationals? How come Juan Soto wasn't enough to just drum up wins for every team he went to? And you're right. The Cubs in council right now, and as obviously Milwaukee's having a much better season, that seems like an overreach and an overpay when they had a good manager in Ross already there. Like, yeah. Look around the rest of Major League Baseball right now. There's a lot of mediocrity and a lot of bad teams. And there's no doubt the Mets are good enough. But yeah, you have to. I'm sorry. I'm not going to just tell you today the Mets are back and they're, you know, the offense is going to just drag them to the right into the mix with winning the division. Like, let's just relax a little bit. It's been a great 12 days. Mets fans should be pumped. I'm not saying anything other than that. Be excited. You should be excited. Because the Mets being back is plausible. It's just not right now. The Mets being back, the Mets being a team to be reckoned with, the Mets being a legitimate contender is not right now, but it's plausible. Be excited. They've turned it around. They're no longer dead. But let's just cool the Jets. It's only been 12 games. That's all I'm saying. I think that's reasonable. Now, you said you have the story on Captain Crook.
Well, quick search. So yes. I was like, unlike you, I was familiar with Mary McCheese, but I had not heard of Captain Crook. So, and with the way Tommy described him, you know, steals hamburgers, he seems very similar to the Hamburglar.
Right.
He specialized as a ship captain in stealing Filet-O-Fishes.
Interesting. He's a Filet-O-Fish thief.
And there are, on this Wikipedia page for McDonald's, which just the fact that that exists, there's a lot more characters than I ever knew existed.
Really? I don't remember any. I remember Mac Tonight. I remember
Doug Jones played Mac Tonight in the commercials.
Right. I remember Mac Tonight. I remember the Hamburglar. And I remember Grimace and obviously Ronald McDonald. That's it. I have no memory of Captain Crook at all. I even saw the picture. No memory of it. Mayor, what was his name again? Mayor what?
Mayor McCheese. And there were Officer Big Mac. I remember those two.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Officer Big Mac. I vaguely remember that. I vaguely remember. I gotta look.
Everybody else on this list outside of, you know, those two and the ones you listed, I've never heard of.
McDonald's characters. That is so weird. Officer Big Mac. I remember that. The Fry Kids. No idea. Birdie the Early Bird.
I think Grimace had an Irish cousin or uncle or something that was for the Shamrock Shake.
I just Googled it. Uncle O'Grimacy.
Uncle O'Grimacy.
He was green, shaped similar to Grimace.
Oh, my God. I vaguely remember looking at him now, the McNugget buddies, too.
And I heard Scott Van Pelt say, if you want to class it up, Grimace.
Grimace.
Also, so according to quick internet search,
yes,
Uncle O'Grimacy was discontinued due to choice comments made by an actor playing the mascot at an event in Philly. Oh, so, of course, it's Philly. and he looks a lot like the Fanatic, minus the nose.
Yeah, and the Shamrock isn't as old as all these. I wouldn't have thought. I don't remember the Shamrock when I was a kid. The Shamrock Shake?
Oh, I do.
Oh, really? Okay, so then I'm wrong. It's that long? Is that old?
Yeah, mid-70s.
Really? Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't remember any. I'm trying to. Did anybody else do this? Did any of these other fast food? I know they have a Burger King?
Burger King, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I vaguely remember that, but that's
it. He was a cartoon in the 70s, like a little short cartoon.
Okay.
And then he became this larger, a real person with a really bad mask head.
Yeah, you don't remember when they made him, he was creepy, and it became like a big Halloween costume that they would try to sell. I don't know if, so I used to work at Target. I remember we had them right. available. I don't remember ever, like, on Halloween night seeing somebody wearing the costume. But Burger King made and sold them.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
He was in the commercials.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, I vaguely remember him, this guy in the commercial where he's kind of got the plastic look. That's later on. Yeah. That's not in the 70s. Or maybe that's the same guy now, I don't know. But I remember that in the commercials, yes.
But I do remember early 70s, a cartoon Burger King.
Yeah.
They should have kept him as a cartoon.
Yeah. He was creepy looking. And I remember, do you remember the Duracell commercials where they had like a family that kind of looked like that, like a plastic family that used to have like the Duracell batteries on their back and they would do things? They kind of look like him. Kind of that plastic, weird face looking. No?
Sounds like you got weird commercials in wherever you were growing up.
No, I remember.
Not like me and Eddie were watching.
Okay, now I got to check out the Duracell family. I'll do it later. I don't want to have a Francesa segment of just dead air and me typing. He can get away with it. I cannot. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. I don't think Taco Bell ever had anybody. Does Taco Bell have like a taco? I don't think so.
No.
No.
There is a McDonald's character. So there's Mick and Mac. So Mac, there you go.
There you go. Mick and Mac.
Plus you have Mac tonight.
Mac tonight. I had a brief conversation with Spike about doing something like that for the open. Let's call the show Mac Tonight. But I was like, it doesn't really work. It's the morning. It's not really the night. But almost did it. Almost did it. Aren't you glad I sing Bobby Darin and Midnight Rider instead? 334, McMonagle here with you on the fan. And do high-pitched laughs and sound just like Joe Beningo. I heard that on the morning show as I was driving home yesterday. I guess I was just coming back from break and yawned or something. I don't know. I don't remember doing it.
Oh, the cry?
Yeah.
And I did hear where Gio asked Jerry for the context, and he didn't have it.
Yeah. Do we have the context? If you haven't heard, this was... I made a guttural noise, I suppose, that sounded very much like Joe Beningo, and they had fun with it on the morning show. And I don't remember... I knew you played it for me before I left, so I knew it was out there, but I don't remember the context. They got 9 stolen bases! That's the most ever from a Red Sox team, and they've been playing since 1900.
It was right at 4 o'clock, like right after Good Morning it faded out.
Yes. There were a lot of Yankee fans crying about those stolen bases. Well, we could put that behind us, and we got the Orioles coming up.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
So, you know, just talking about McDonald's, obviously, if you don't know the story, grimaced throughout the first pitch, the second game of the Miami Marlins series with the Mets, and the Mets haven't lost since. So everyone wants to give credit to Grimace. It's a real fun story. He's got a cute big novelty glove. He's purple. He's Grimace. They haven't lost since. Ha ha ha. Let's ask the first question to Brandon Nimmo after they pound the Texas Rangers and go on a 6-game winning streak to pull within a game of a playoff spot. Let's ask the first question about Grimace. It's so much fun, this Grimace story. But besides that, we've been talking about all the different characters. And by the way, I found the Duracell battery family commercial. It's creepy. But it reminded me of something I saw the other day. Since we're talking about fast food and commercials. I saw something the other day on Instagram that... I have very rarely been hit with a wave of nostalgia like I was hit when I saw this. I don't know why. I hadn't seen it in years, but for whatever reason, it just was like, I almost cried. I'm not kidding. I'm not like weeped, but I was almost like, oh my God, this like takes me back to being a kid. Like it was such a wave. And I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, but And the Instagram reel specifically said what it was from, and this is exactly where I got it too. The VHS for the Ninja Turtle movies, the live action Ninja Turtle movies that were so great that I loved. Then the second one was I forget the name of the first one. I think it was just Ninja Turtles. Then the second one was like Secret of the Ooze, and then they went back in time to like Imperial Japan, and the third one or whatever. It was a weird one, but the first two were good. Anyway. I'm sure it was in other places, but that's exactly where I got it to. If you bought the VHS for that movie, and maybe movies of that era, there was a commercial before the movie started. It was a Little League baseball player, and there was a song that played, I Play Right Field. I play right field out where the dandelions grow. And it's this young kid out in the right field, and it's a Pizza Hut commercial. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But I definitely had seen it a million times when I was a young kid, like younger than 10. And someone played that on a reel on Instagram, and I was just hit with a wave of nostalgia. Like it just, like I pictured myself sitting in my living room where I grew up. Like it just, I was like, I hadn't seen it in forever. That is a great commercial. He's out playing right field, he drops a ball or whatever, then the whole team goes to Pizza Hut back when if you remember, Pizza Huts were like more than just a shop window now. I don't know, I don't even see Pizza Huts that much. I see much more Domino's. But like Pizza Hut was like a big place with like the red roof. Like they had a distinct look, and you would go to Pizza Hut. Not very often because we live in New York and we had better pizza than Pizza Hut. I don't want to knock Pizza Hut or Domino's, but it is what it is. But we would go there every once in a while. But that commercial, I don't know what it was. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't know if any of you know what I'm talking about. If you've seen the commercial, I know these two back there, Anthony Gallo's back there talking about God knows what. Probably talking about soccer. They're not even listening to me. Sitting in there, having their cup of coffee, yammering on about God knows what. I'm trying to talk about a commercial. No one cares.
I hate pizza, Domino's, soccer. We got it all.
888-808-1019, 888-808. Well, I'm just kidding. You can stay and talk, Gallo. Don't worry about it. Don't mind me. It's all right. Hey, let me know the next time when you host. I'll go back there and just chat it up with the producer all day. All right? We'll call it even. What do you got? What's the shirt? Looks hippie.
It's a Roots Picnic, like,
Roots
concert
Picnic
shirt.
It's a concert Roots Picnic shirt?
Music festival.
Is that the name of the festival or a band?
Both. Well, Roots, the house band that Jimmy Fallon has,
okay,
and then
course,
they do the Roots Picnic.
Oh, I was unaware of that. Okay, I know the Roots are, yeah.
2-day event, Philly.
Not bad.
Yes, very funky shirt. I figured it matches Eddie's vibes.
Absolutely. Oh, you working with Eddie today?
I am. I'll be on the warm-up show.
Oh, look at you. Stepping up.
Yeah, and that's why I'm here still.
Yeah, I mean, I figured.
Live in Sal's office when he's not here.
Do you? You're not stealing his baseball cards, are you? 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. We talked a lot about the Mets. We talked a lot about the Yankees as well as they prepare tonight for the start of the biggest series of the season. And I know they've got 50 wins, and I know it's June, and I know it's a Baltimore Orioles team that they'll play again as the division rival, but right now they are a game and a half up on this young, talented, last year's divisional winner, Baltimore Orioles, who, despite the fact that the Yankees have got off to this great start of playing damn near 700 baseball, the Orioles are right behind them at 47-24. They actually have the same number of losses. The Yankees have played three more games, obviously won all of them. They have three more wins. But a game and a half up, right there, they've scored the exact, they've given up the exact same number of runs. Now, the Yankees have played three more games, so technically they've done a better job. And the Yankees have scored 10 more runs, and again, three more games, so it's roughly the same. I mean, these teams are extremely close. These are the two best teams in the American League. I think everybody would admit that, especially with Houston taking such a downturn here, where they are six games under 500 dealing with injuries. Same thing for the Rangers, six games under 500, have a negative run differential, and have lost four in a row, including getting pounded by the Mets last night. The Mariners are in first place, but they don't really hit very well. The Cleveland Guardians have a great record at 44-25, but I get the feeling not many people believe in that roster. So the two best teams in the American League, the two best teams in this division, the Red Sox are 11.5 games back, so it's the Orioles and the Yankees battling for the American League East all year long. They've had a four-game series already in Baltimore. Baltimore took 3 of 4, and they come to the Bronx tonight to start what is the biggest series of the year, where you could find, theoretically, the Yankees out of first place at the end of these three games. Gerrit Cole will make his season debut on Wednesday, the middle game of this series, which I find interesting. And I want to put it this way because I think it continues on a trajectory of how this Yankee team is viewing this season and how it's different than previous seasons. Because I will tell you, previous seasons, Gerrit Cole doesn't make the start. Previous seasons, this team doesn't allow him to start this game against the Orioles in a game that is important, a game against a very good team, and a game that you could see Cole getting amped up for. Now, I know Cole is very smart. I know Cole understands that this is a game in June. I understand he knows it's his first game back. But there's just things you can't control, like battling for first place with your rival. And if they lose game one tonight against with Nestor Cortez on the mound, that becomes a very big game. And I'm surprised that they would put him in that position. And I think it speaks to the urgency this team has shown all year when they haven't shown it in previous years. And we talk about all the things that remain the same. And at the end of the year, things need to change. And they need to change their analytics. You know, even Judge was talking about the added needed for urgency. And especially at the start of the year. And they all showed up at camp early and were working out in Florida. Everybody was pissed off about the loss and the embarrassing season and all that. And the Yankees were going to have this internal audit that never amounted to anything. And obviously they don't fire Cashman. Obviously they don't fire Boone. They don't fire the analytics team. Very few changes inside the organization. And when asked in the first press conference of the year about the changes that were set to come, the owner mentions bunting. So a lot of laughing, a lot of disregard, and a lot of the Yankees will never change, even though they desperately need to, was the narrative of the offseason. And while that narrative has kind of gone away because they've won 50 games and they're 50-24 and the best record in all of Major League Baseball, the thing that has changed is the urgency Judge talked about. Because we have seen Judge has had one off day this year. One. They play their guys every day. Every day. They attack every game with a level of importance they haven't previously done. No better example than the end of the West Coast trip against the San Francisco Giants. They had already secured a series victory against the Giants. They had already secured a winning road trip out on the West Coast. They had a day off the next day after the final game against San Francisco, heading home, and that was a clear-cut day to give Judge the double offer. They love that. They love being able to give guys those back-to-back days off on an off day, and they still played them. And then they went out and rallied in the ninth and won that game in late innings with the heroic home run from Juan Soto. This team has treated the regular season differently this year. And to now have a series against Baltimore, and to not have Gerrit Cole necessarily amped up to 100, his last start, I believe he threw 70 pitches, he still would have been online for one more at the minor league level. One more rehab assignment. I don't think anybody would have quibbled. I don't think anybody would have been like, oh, man, how do you not throw him against Baltimore? I think everybody would have understood. I think it would have secured him being really ready to go for 90, 100 pitches in his first start. It would have been less pressure. It would have been a lot easier to not thrust him right into this big series where the fan base is just dying to answer the question of how the Yankees, despite all their wins, stack up against the other great teams in the American League or in Major League Baseball, because you know they lost to the Dodgers. You know, they lost 3 out of 4 to Baltimore the last time they played them. You know, all of a sudden the Red Sox are a great team because they beat the Yankees 2 of 3. So clearly the Red Sox are a great team now. Oh, don't forget, Seattle's really good too because they split that series. But Cleveland, despite having the you know, 44-25, they're not good. The Kansas City Royals, despite the fact they're 11 games over 500, they're not any good. Nobody's good except the teams that beat the Yankees, of course. But as we wait to see how we're going to stack up against this Orioles team that won 100 games last year, this young, upstart Orioles team, as now we found out that you can steal bases at will against the Yankees, and the Orioles are going to use that to their advantage in this series, they are thrusting their best pitcher, their ace, the guy who everyone told me was the team was lost without him. As he comes back, they are thrusting him right into the middle of this big series. And I'm just telling you, I don't think they do it last year. I don't think they do it the year before. I think this is the first year where they would do something like this. Cody Petit's been great. Not just good, great. He's been excellent. There's no reason he can't go again. There's no reason you can't trust him in this game. Because ultimately, yeah, it'd be disappointing to fall out of first place or lose that game. It's June. It's June. You've won 50 games without Cole. You can get through this series. And yet still, they decide to throw him in the middle of this series. And they still put him in this. And what it tells me is they are viewing this as games they want to win. This is an important series to the New York Yankees. I think losing the last two games against Boston in the manner they did might have something to do with it. They were embarrassed on Sunday Night Baseball. I think that might have something to do with it. But ultimately, this team has treated a lot of things differently. Luis Gil and his inning limits. I mean, they haven't been put to the test just yet, but they're talking as if they're going to handle it differently. Throwing Cole in this game. Playing Judge the amount of time they have. Not playing their bench players. I mean, Jones, is he on the team? He plays once a month. That is drastically different than the way the Yankees have handled their bench in previous years. Drastically different. And so as this season starts, you might think, hey, just an Orioles season, it's just a series in June. We'll see. I mean, yes, it's a bigger series than others, but ultimately, what does it prove? Is there anything to be gained from this? Is there any real... You know, yeah, I mean, if one team sweeps, if the Yankees sweep, now they're 4.5 games up, which is a much bigger cushion. If the Orioles sweep, then they're a game and a half up and flop positions with the Yankees. So in the standings, even in June, yeah, there's some significance to it. Having already lost a series to the Orioles, you don't want to fall too far behind them and, you know, lose another series to the Orioles. But ultimately, it's a series in June. And if that's your opinion, I get it. The Yankees don't share it, though. The Yankees do not share it. Because if they deemed it to be just another series in June, they would not throw their ace, who's coming back from injury, who hasn't worked up to 100 pitches yet, thrust him right into an important spot where you know he can't control. It's very difficult, no matter how much you tell yourself. It's very much like if you're, you know, like me in gym class, right? I would go to gym class every day in high school, and say, I'm not going to get sweaty. It's third period. They stuck me with early gym. I don't want to go out there and, like, bust my butt in basketball to win, to beat the kid in class, to beat, you know, Bobby Townsend in basketball gym. Why would I do that? I don't want to do that. I don't want to be sweaty all day long. We don't have showers in our gym. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to ruin my whole day just to go out there. And then you know damn well I'm down 2 points and all of a sudden I'm busting my ass to win a meaningless basketball game. Because once you get competing, you can't stop yourself. And you're going to thrust him into this situation against a team like this, in a situation like this, and trust him to understand his body and understand not to push it and understand not to get a little bit more on a fastball to try and strike out Adley Rutschman with runners on second and third? They're throwing him right in because they want to show the Orioles who the Yankees are. And we're going to find out who they are. 888-808-1019. There's no excuse in this one. Juan Soto will be playing in this series. Gerrit Cole will be pitching in this series. Clay Holmes will be closing games, hopefully, in this series. And there's another player I haven't mentioned who clearly is the one player who needs to step up and have a big series.